when we finalize it, I think the procedure, it still has got to go through the state law advisors and then come back after that. So we are only having today, tomorrow, and Friday meeting, because it should be with the office of the speaker, I think, by the end of Friday. You see. So I would therefore try, I'll appeal to everybody here to be very focused on this bill and to finalize it as soon as we can, but not at all cost, of course, to finalize it when we feel that it needs to be finalized. So I am not pushing people that this bill must be finalized at all costs. All that I'm trying to say that let us mobilize our energies, whether retroactive or not. We must utilize all possible energies to have this bill smoothly finalized for us to meet the deadline of debating it on Tuesday. So I will therefore, without wasting time, allow members, because there are some new faces, as a matter of procedure, let us introduce ourselves to the delegation from the department and then start the work of the day, the business of the day. My name is Ngabangobo, the chairperson of this committee from the African National Congress, and I will allow my colleague here to...
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, everybody. My name is Dorcas Diadimo, a member of this committee from African National Congress.
My name is Comrade Obam Naren, the committee whip. You must underline that, Comrade Obam Naren.
My name is Anes Kumbrink, a member of the ANC, a member of this committee.
Sanibonani Themba Mahlaba, ilunga laleli committee elimele inhlangano kayini.
Nomvula Mathibela, member of this committee from the ruling party. Thank you.
Janice Kana, member of the committee.
Anshendraya, member of the DA, member of this committee.
Peter Paul Mbele, committee secretary.
Johnny from the West Station, committee assistant.
Nopula Ngaba from National Union of Women Workers.
Sibusiso Mimi from NUM. Osborne Tingwa, language section, state law advisor.
Fred Gona from the National Union of Mine Workers.
DBN, DME Minister.
DME Legal Services.
Mato the title, the Senior State Law Advisor from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor.
Fred Barusaha, DME Legal Services.
Dutawo Homo, DME.
Good morning, my name is Tidiso Makubela. I'm head of the nuclear section at the Department of Minerals and Energy.
Morning, Scott Duvall, senior nuclear specialist, DME.
Morning, my name is Vusi Twala from ESCOM.
Morning, Andre Fatsebe from ESCOM.
Morning, my name is Henry Fortain, I'm from CSR.
Morning, Thabo Molefe, Leloko la Mokgatlho wa ANC.
I think we have introduced ourselves now, all of us from all sides. I think we can continue. Chief Director, then continue with the business of the day.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Once again, morning to honorable members of the committee. We were given a task by the committee following the presentation as well as the public hearing to relook at the bill, and we took note of the comments that were made, and we tried our best to make improvements to the draft. One of the most difficult tasks that we had was really to decide on the actual name of this entity. But we have made a proposal, and we hope that that will be acceptable to the committee. But what I propose, Chairperson, is that we go through the bill line by line, and also indicate where the changes have been made. I'm also mindful of what the Chairperson has advised us on the issue of time. That's acceptable. Okay, then I'll ask Dr. Duval to take us through the changes.
Thank you, Chair. The title of the bill we propose now to change to National Radioactive Waste Disposal Institute as a result of the comments that we had. We also consider that waste management creates confusion because this entity is really responsible for waste disposal, and all nuclear installations manage their own waste also, so we don't want that confusion. So we feel the Disposal Institute is the word, and instead of agency, as a result of the comments that we had. So again, in the preamble, we've just replaced a management agency with Disposal Institute. Otherwise, the wording stays the same. Throughout the text, we've changed institute. We've also changed the persons on the board from members to directors. So throughout the text, members have been changed to directors. This is consistent with our other nuclear legislation, the Nuclear Energy Act and the National Nuclear Regulatory Act. In the definitions, we've expanded the definition of authorized to authorized waste disposal facility. The reason for that is authorized is also used in the text in its general meaning. So for clarity, we just want to define authorized waste disposal facility to ensure there's no misunderstanding of that. Under the definition of Director General, we've just added means the Director General of the Department of Minerals and Energy. Then we've added a definition, the definition of Radioactive Waste Management Fund. It means a fund established in terms of an Act of Parliament to provide for the long-term management of radioactive waste. It's important that we add this definition because Radioactive Waste Management Fund is mentioned under funds of the Institute, whereby the Institute will receive funds for long-term management aspects of radioactive waste.
I think it's a fund that we have to be managed. I thought it can't be consistent because you are managing a fund now which deals with this whole thing.
Okay. also chair, yeah, I think it should read as well.
Yeah. I thought because means a fund established in terms of an act of parliament to provide for the long-term management of the radioactive waste. No, I'm look at the radioactive waste management fund. Means, see, there's still management there.
Yeah, that is why they about the necessary land, and it should be disposal farm, and it should be long term disposal. Let them go for.
Yeah, I think the reason for that is this comes from the policy, the radioactive waste management policy. And that policy determined that there shall be a radioactive waste management fund for long-term management of radioactive waste. So that is the policy, but clearly this is legislation, so I don't know if you have any recommendations on this.
My point is that if that is waste management fund, so in terms of definition, it should be consistent with the fund itself, because the fund is radioactive management fund. So that's a long-term management of radioactive waste. It doesn't contradict what radioactive waste management fund stands for. So I thought, in terms of consistency, we can maintain that, but if it's not, we can solicit for some advice, but I thought that's how it stands.
The problem is that, you see, they have come and said that management of waste is not what is supposed to be the duty of this institute. The duty of this institute is to manage the disposal of waste. So, therefore, if we are saying that, so they are saying that in the policy document, which was collecting management and disposal, waste management and waste disposal as one thing, then they are saying that then there is a problem now here, because they've already adopted that this institute is not supposed to be responsible for the waste management except the disposal management. So I think if they are saying, but they are saying that they can't change the radioactive waste management fund, which is established by another act of parliament, which is defined as such. But that in that fund, they were foreseeing. That's why they had not really isolated management of waste and disposal of waste. Okay, yeah.
Thank you. That's
the solution. I think there is one hand there from the local resource to advise us.
Sorry, Chair. This amendment that you are discussing at the moment, we had it in the bill that was from the department, and we took it away. The reason being that fund is not there yet, and there's no way you can refer to it in a legislation, because it's an idea at the moment. There's no fund. You can't say, you can't put a fund that doesn't exist in a legislation. So what we had done previously when we were certifying the bill, we said, okay, this fund is not there yet, and the department told us that it's going to be established by means of an act of parliament, and that act of parliament is still in the drafting stage. So we said, okay, no, you don't have to refer to it in this legislation. Hence, we took it out. But now they have put it back, and I just want to point it to the committee that from a legal point of view and drafting, you cannot refer to it in this legislation because it's still to be formed. So just to cut the debate, there will be time to debate it when it's being established. But at this stage, we don't need to refer to it in this legislation. We know that it's something that is going to be done, but legally speaking, you don't take an idea and put it in a legislation if it's not something that exists yet.
I think we do have a challenge here because the first thing from our side is how then do you deal with the funds of the agents? How will the agents be funded? Because the policy says the polluter needs to pay. That's what the policy says. It's quite clear. And you need to reflect that in law somewhere. And if it's not reflected here, our view is that the agency then cannot be functional at all until then we have the fund. You know, so what this means then is that maybe what we can do is that we can link the operationalization of the agency then to that other, the operationalization of this act to the Fund Act being also operational, like it was done with the two nuclear acts, where they were supposed to come into force on the same, you know, on the same day. So maybe that's something that can be done. But I think to omit it, in our view, it means we'll have to come back and then have an amendment later on. That was our view. But if the legal thing, I think we can resolve by operationalizing the institute at the same time as the...
Can the law experts advise us that here is a small challenge, it's not a big one, but it's very clear that this institute therefore can't operate without the reference or establishment of such a path. And so they are saying already there is a situation where there has been a simultaneous institution or institutionalization of two acts in order to support one another to each other. And can you then put a proper wording here for that to happen before we have a problem? What would be the proper wording, therefore, to embrace that here? Is it not possible to say that the radioactive waste management fund to be established in accordance with policy, then they can then continue and finish off what they are saying? How is it?
Ask a question.
Yeah.
The question is that can you establish a fund for the implementation of this legislation? Because this legislation, as is established, it can only be possible for it to be operational if a radioactive management fund is established. State law advisor.
Through you, Chair. It's not something easy I can just think of at the moment. But practically, you are not allowed to refer in a legislation to something that doesn't exist. Hence, if you look at Section 21. In page 9, it deals about the funds of the agents. the way that section is crafted, it gives a leeway to the establishment of this fund at a later stage. And then when you establish that fund by means of a legislation, in that fund, in that legislation which deals with funding, then you refer to this one that already exists. Because you say this fund is for, is to provide for funding for this institute which has been established in terms of this act. So you can refer to it when you deal with that that act of parliament establishing the fund, not at this stage, not on this one. We know that they will need a fund in order to operate, but that is cured in terms of Section 21, because Section 21 says how is it going to get funds. It's clear it's gonna get funds even before that fund has been established. And then when you establish the fund, you refer to this act, the one we are busy with now. So it's not gonna be a problem if you leave it out now, because you will still have an opportunity to refer it back.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question is, if we don't put it in now, does that mean that we are going to come back when we establish it to amend again, or what are we going to do?
No, it's saying that because of the special use of funds, it's already referred to the establishment under Section 21. Is that what you are saying?
Chair, what I'm saying is this. We are looking at the way this institute is going to work. Yeah. We say in order for this institute to operate successfully, there must be a specific fund to finance it. And the department wants that fund to be formed, not in terms of this act. We had that question, why don't you form it in terms of this act? They said, no. We want to form it in terms of a separate act of parliament. And then we said, no, you don't need to refer to it now. You can craft your funding provision in such a way that it allows you to form the fund by means of another act. But there was no problem. There is no problem if you don't refer to it here, because the act that will be promulgated after this one, it will talk to this one. This one can't talk to an act that doesn't exist. But the one to be formed can refer to this one.
What the department says, and what we say, see, because we are now dealing with the bills. So we want to establish this fund in terms of this act. So what's the problem? The decision is ours. So I'm saying, what is the problem?
So what the member is saying is that this bill now is before us, the committee, and you have advised us as a law expert that there is a problem in referring to something that doesn't exist. And here there is a view that says there is no way that the town can refer to this, because then it means that we will not be operational until this act. And in fact, if you then say so, you are saying therefore that beyond 2009, because there is no bill that can be started now from the department and passed through and out until the election. So we have a bill here. We have a technicality that you have identified as an expert. We are saying that now, craft it for us here, because you already had an idea which unfortunately at that time was turned down by the department, because the bill was the bill of the department. But now it's no longer the bill of the department, it's the bill of this committee. And this committee wants that we finalize this bill and we craft it in such a way that it has no, what you call it, flaws. So that is what we are saying now. That initial idea that you had said, that why don't you form it according to the
this prayer. So why this issue therefore is not formed according to this prayer? Because otherwise we are dealing with a dead thing, because then we are wasting our time, because this thing will never be operational until 2010 or later. You see, if it is not established in collaboration with this fund. So that's what we are saying here. Marshall.
Thanks, Chair. I think, Chairperson, the problem lies between the state law advisor and the department. Can they help us with this one? If it means that we need to give them 2 minutes just to look into this, because at the end of the day, they are the two people who should be advising us as a committee for this to be approved. Thanks.
We can proceed, and they can make whatever. We can proceed with other things.
But I do not know why we are arguing now, because this department has already put its view that they can't continue with the process of establishing this with this institute without this fund being there. And the state law advisor has come out and said, well, whoever they discussed with in the initial stages of this, they did say that because you can't technically put reference to something not established, why don't you establish it simultaneously in this act? And so now, these views, the departmental and the state law advisors, are not contradictory, because the department wants to establish it in collaboration with the establishment of the FAR. And the total state law advisor saying that is possible, because that is in fact it's what we said even initially. And we are a committee, we are saying that, so why don't we do so then? Because nobody is opposed to that now here. We are not opposed, department is not opposed, you came with the idea initially, which was opposed some time ago when the bill was in the department. Now it's not there, now the department is here. I think it's all these are juristic persons from the department. So if they are saying that something went wrong there, fine. But as long as we are solving the technicality of this bill, that it is not a flawed bill, then why are we not then doing that? Right.
Okay, Chair. Chair, it is appropriate to form this fund by means of this act, because this fund is going to fund the institute which is established in terms of this act. But the question we need to ask, perhaps from the department, is to why do they want to form that fund by means of a separate act from this one?
Can you answer? Sorry.
Thank you, Chair. I think the last aspect is because it's going to be a money bill. It's a different aspect. And because the national policy approved by government say you shall have a radioactive waste management fund and you shall have a disposal entity. That's the policy that the department is working on. That's why it is like it is. But I would like to just ask if it would be possible to solve this problem by saying means a fund to be established in terms of an act of parliament. Would that be acceptable? Means a fund to be established in terms of an act of parliament.
Yeah, that is true, but I'm very worried now once these technicalities have come up. How long, therefore, will it take? Because looking at all the procedural technicalities, it means this fund will not be established. So it means this institute will not work for a long time.
Chair, the purpose of the fund is for long-term management,
okay,
which you know, is really long term, because we're going to deal with high level waste in terms of this fund. What the entity is going to do now is, it is an operation. We want it to be independent from the generator, and it will keep operating, receiving low and intermediate level waste. And that's why there's no problem once this bill is enacted for this entity to be operational, because it will keep on disposing low and intermediate level waste and will be paid for it, and its establishment will be paid for by Parliament, by money appropriated by Parliament. Yes, that's one of the conditions later on. I mean, it's in the bill, just to establish it. But thereafter, the generators will pay for the normal operational aspects of it. But the long-term aspect is, that's why you need this money bill, and that's why you need special, and it's a complicated thing, because the generators will have to contribute to this fund. And it's a more complicated thing to work out with National Treasury how, what kind of money they should contribute to this fund. It's a more complicated book. Thank you.
It does make some sense to me.
Chairperson, I actually was going to request that we be given some 5 minutes to discuss, because also, I mean, the complication with the fund is that, you know, who is going to manage the fund? Will it be Treasury? Will it be the Reserve Bank? Because, you know, internationally the view is that the executive really shouldn't have access to such a fund, because then it gets used for other pressing needs. So it usually, you know, in some countries it's left to the Reserve Bank. Then you know that, you know, it will only be used for disposal. But I request that we, you know, we be given just 3 to 5 minutes to consult with the state last.
But according to what your colleague has explained now, this is not an immediate thing. So we don't have to adjourn here for this, because you can sort it out at a later date, because it's got a lot of complications which he has already alluded to and which we understand. So I think therefore here it's a matter of wording, that it is properly worded, not to confuse issues, technicalities of constitution here. Once it is properly worded, once it is agreed to that it has to be established in terms of this act, unless, as a separate act, as has been explained, as a separate, money bill, then therefore, then there's no problem, because it's not, when it starts to operate, this institute, it's not going to be using, actually, that treasury. It won't be established by the treasury or the money bill that has got to be in place. It will be established in accordance with the departmental and parliamentary funding, and so that is a matter that is not in conflict with anything. So we can continue. But if you feel that there are some small technicalities that you want to iron out, then fine. I can give you the 5 minutes.
Chair, I wanted to second the initial proposal by Honorable Mashaba, that as even they have themselves requested, that we give them those minutes, so that they sort out this.
I'm going to go to the hospital. Thank you.
Okay, I think we should resume our session. I'm hoping that everything has been now refined and sorted out. Let us hear what solutions have come up with.
Thank you, Chair. I think we've found some common ground here. Under Section 21, we're proposing under C to say money transferred to the Institute from the Radioactive Waste Management Fund, that must be established by an Act of Parliament. And then we propose to delete the definition. So this will be consistent with the policy, and we have here then to take the definition out. Thank you, Chair.
As long as both of you are happy, we are happy, but we do not have power. We don't want to have power so that we see who is defeated and throw the towel. You see, so we want here to hear you to come with one voice.
Right. Thank you, Chair. So we will proceed then. Under Section 5, we're talking about the functions of the Institute and setting out the various functions. What we've done here, we've changed management to disposal, as we've discussed previously. Under B, we've changed, we've considered the word classes instead of categories, which is consistent with the policy wording. That should not be a problem there. And we've also inserted under the functions various aspects, under various subsections, the word storage, to just make sure that it's clear under the function that they receive radioactive waste packages, and clearly there's going to be elements of storage before they dispose it. So it's important that we just add.
Just comment out that. What are those lines for?
These are the deletions, Chair. If I go to smaller, if you look in your text,
yeah,
you will see it just show what is the change has been made.
Oh, okay.
What has been deleted?
Okay, fine.
Mike, please, sir.
Thank you, Chair. Under J, we want to change the wording to read manage the disposal of any ownerless radioactive waste on behalf of the state. There's a very small quantity of ownerless waste that's identified. People that smuggle the things that the police has confiscated, or where some small generator has disappeared and we cannot. So you must cater for this. Somebody must be responsible for the management, the disposal of that ownerless waste. So it's important for us to make that change. Then we think it should be ancillary powers of the Institute, because already they have powers in terms of their function. So we want to call it ancillary powers, like our other legislation. And here we've just inserted the word Institute. Then the board of the Institute, we want to say the Institute is governed and controlled in accordance with this act by a board of directors. Again, this is consistent with our nuclear legislation, existing ones that's been approved by this committee in the past. These are, yes, okay.
Listen, I just wanted to just check if we are not going too fast, because we from our side, we've been through this, but we don't want to. We are mindful that you are reading as we're going along.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
So, Chair, we will come back from the beginning for line by line for the approval, I suppose.
Yeah, or, but can you see what is important here? Because it takes us many days.
Yes.
If we still go roll and roll and roll and roll, we have to get things correct up to the end. So it's only one line by line, we know what is. So the pace is not too bad, but it, of course, it should also allow us to be able to interrogate something if we think we're fighting.
Thank you, Chair. Apologies then, Chair. Okay, so these are just changes that I've already discussed with you, changing the name to Institute. So I'm just scrolling down to see whether there are new changes that I need to bring to your attention. Here under sub 6, we had to add the word and, because otherwise it doesn't read correct, on the basis of their qualifications and knowledge. Otherwise it would have read their qualifications, knowledge. So I don't think that would have been correct. These are changes that I have discussed. We just want to refer here to the relevant subsection. If the board fails to comply with an order contemplated in subsection 10, the minister may dissolve the board. So we're referring to an existing subsection. These are changes. We've changed child to family member to make it more generic. So it reads, a director of the board may not take part in the discussion of any matter before the board in which that director or his or her spouse, life partner, family member, business partner, associate, or employer, other than the state, has a direct or indirect financial interest. We think that family member is better than child. Then the section on disqualification from directorships, we've just changed the word from member to director there. The terms of office of directors, again, member to directors. The removal from the office and vacation of office of board directors. We've changed just members to directors. Otherwise, the text there is exactly the same. The remuneration of directors and committee members, changed members to directors. Meetings of the board, again, members to directors. No other changes. Minutes of board meetings, that's straightforward, only one member changed to director. The committees of the board, again, we've changed members to directors and agency to institute. The delegation and assignment by the board. There don't seem to be any changes there. The chief executive officer of the institute. Yeah, this is sort of a legal way of writing. Chief Executive Officer of the Institute. That's the way that the legal experts write. We just changed then agency. We've added the word here under sub 4. Subject to the provisions of the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act, the minister may at any time remove the chief executive officer from office, if the chief executive officer, etc. And the wording otherwise stayed the same. Let me just see, Chair. I just don't want to miss something here that I've deleted. Let me go back here. Under 16, the Chief Executive Officer of the Institute, 16.1, we've deleted the section, the previous subsection 2, the appointment must be made after following a transparent and competitive selection process. We don't think that wording is very clear, and it can be open to to interpretation, to follow a transparent and competitive selection. I mean, what does it mean, a competitive? So we believe that that could lead to, because it's not really clear, every person will have his own interpretation of that section. The chief executive officer will also delete it on subsection 3, but may not serve more than two consecutive terms. I mean, this is not a DME position in our CEOs of our institutes. They can definitely, if they qualify, we don't want to limit them. What we do want to limit is are the directors on the board, maybe for two terms, but not the CEO of the institution. So we've deleted that wording, Chair.
You have deleted the whole that point. Is that
on the right column, that is what we're proposing to delete. Yes. So first of all, we've deleted the requirement to follow a transparent and competitive selection process. I mean, this is the minister that consults various that set up a panel and consult with the panel to the appointment. We don't think we should tell the minister to do a transparent and competitive selection. And then also, we don't think that the CEO should only serve two terms. We don't have that in our other legislation for CEOs. We don't want to limit the CEO. If the CEO is doing a good job, and, you know, why not keep him on?
Oh, but you can. We can, because of the nature of the institute. If we decide here that, listen, this institute, we do not want a person who is going to end up having being a collaborator of international companies, and then we are unable to remove him because we said that it's unlimited. We have to look at these instances in their own context. In this case, this institute is not like just an ordinary officer of the department. Is a very important institute. It's about the region, the safety of the region. It's about the safety of the continent. So we want to be able to make him on his heels. We may say, I'm not saying that he must only serve two officials, but I think we must have that he can continue at the discretion, whatever, but there shouldn't be an automatic, it should be reviewable, the process, according to, after two terms, it should be reviewable. People start to establish networks after two terms. That is why many positions of strategic importance are cut off after two terms. Because it is after two terms when people get rooted network, and then they are able to then manipulate the situation.
So we take the point. I think what we probably would need to think about is the 3-year term. You know, if we restrict it to two terms, then the 3-year term, in my view, it's a bit on the short side. If it were a 5-year term, and maybe then a restriction would be perhaps the way to go, because I think more than 10 years would really be in one position, then I think would then create maybe a problem. But what we found, even with the CEOs that we have, is that the 3 years go so fast.
I think two 3-year terms, after two terms, which is 6 years in any event. And in 10 years, he would have done a lot of damage. And we have examples of damage that have been done in 10 years already. About democracy, we are not protecting anybody, including ourselves.
Yeah. 3 years?
the period which can be for a second term. Second term is fine. Because if you say 5 years is too long. 3 years is fine. If a person planner in 1 year, the person must go in 1 year. But the limit, you see, it will be unfair to assess a person in 1 year. So you say, in 3 years is done enough. You see, to assess a person. That is why the company will use its discretion to renew the contract for another term. But after 6 years, the person must go.
I just want to point out, we're talking about the CEO, that's a technical executive position. It's not a political decision like the board and the chairman of the board. So the CEO is still subject to the policy of the board and still ultimately to the minister. So if the CEO messes up, he or she can still be fired. And this is a highly technical field, highly specialized field. You need a bit of time to get established and then to do a proper job. And networking, you refer to it in a negative sense, but it can also have a very positive consequences. You have to network internationally with your counterparts and so on. So I tend to go along with the department saying that, 6 years is a relatively short time in that highly specialized field. And, I don't think we have to be worried if there are provisions in place that someone who is not performing can be kicked out if necessary.
I think, therefore, let us put it as if that is the argument acceptable. Therefore, 3 years renewable is enough, because if things go wrong within after 3 years, we can not renew the term. So I think, therefore, it's unlimited, but it's renewable every after 3 years. I think then it solves the problem, because therefore all instruments are in place, and if a person doesn't perform in the first 3 years. Then that person term office is not renewed, and if he's doing good, then it's renewed, and indefinitely it's renewed. As long as he or she is doing good, we renew the term of office. But as long as we starting to network elsewhere and in the detriment of the nation, we remove it. I think that is it. I think that's fine like that. Yeah, I think it's simple. 3 year renewable contract. Yeah. Without restriction of time. Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Chair. I think subsection 3 is actually exactly that, because it reads that CEO holds office for a period not exceeding 3 years and may be reappointed upon expiry of that term. So we just had it. I think it resolves the issue. It's coming back. Chair, under subsection 5, we've removed the words suitably qualified. So it reads, whenever due to absence or for any other reason the chief executive officer is temporarily unable to perform the functions of that office, or when that office is vacant, the board may designate an employee of the institute to act as chief executive officer until the incumbent of that office resumes the functions of the CEO. Now, the board, clearly we must trust the board to appoint a qualified person. I don't think we should put in the act suitably qualified, because again, then this open up, the decision of the board, who they appoint as an acting CEO. I mean, you expect the board to be doing their job and appointing a person that is suitable to. Again, somebody will say, but what does it mean suitably qualified? Must you have a BSc or a PhD? Or so we don't want to put in words that could cause interpretation problems.
I do have a problem with that. And the problem, you'll remember it very well, sir. In the council for Council for Nuclear Safety, there was a bizarre arrangement. suitably qualified people were supervised by people who were not qualified. And because the board had these kinds of discretion, then they abused that privilege. And we do not want, therefore, this thing to happen, especially in the nuclear industry, in an institute of this nature. We want that the board, we must be able to say to the board one day, how did it happen that you appointed this person in the presence of these people? We want to be able to say that. We can't have a situation locking us in and saying that, well, actually, according to the Act, the board has the discretion to take anybody anywhere to come and simply, we don't want to have we already have, that's why we were thrown out of the nuclear industries, because then those boards had that discretion. So we don't want that thing to repeat itself.
Okay, Chair, we've made that correction then. We've returned a suitably qualified employee. Then we've added the wording here also, or as the case may be, the vacancy is filled by the minister through the appointment of a chief executive officer under section 16.1. Because the previous wording say, or when that office is vacant, then you have to have this wording, because the minister, when it's vacant, the minister must make the appointment. So we have to put that wording back, Chair. Thank you. Chair, apologies. I just want to go to back, because what I realized when I increased the size of my wording, I actually lost some of the changes, or I didn't show some of the changes that I've made. So I mean that.
I think it's this size. I think everybody's able to see this, yeah. And it helps us because we are able to know what has been deleted.
That's correct. Yeah. So I just want to go back to some of these issues. Under Section 7, we've just changed it to read, the Institute is governed and controlled in accordance with this Act by a Board of Directors. Now, this is the same wording that we have in our other legislation. The Act establishes the agency, and in the Act, obviously, the Board is also then established. Okay, we've changed agency to institute, and we've changed member. Here under subsection 6, it used to read, the directors contemplated in subsection 2E, now that's the five directors that appoint from civil society, are appointed by the minister on the basis of their qualifications and knowledge, and it used to read, and experience in radioactive waste management. Now clearly people from civil society, you have difficulty to find anybody there that has experience. So if you leave this wording in, you'd be unlikely to find somebody that you can appoint from civil society. We don't think that's appropriate wording, Chair. Now, also, the appointment of a panel to compile a short list of not more than 15 candidates from the person so nominated in terms of paragraph A, it used to read, which may include representatives of the relevant parliamentary committee. Now, the State Law Advisor has proposed that we do not insert that, although I must say that this wording is in our other legislation. And the process that we follow there is the Minister compile a panel involving this Parliamentary Portfolio Committee. So now it reads, the Minister appoint the panel and leads it. So I don't know what...
Yeah, no, that is very... it's very dangerous. That kind of wording. The minister, most of the consistent acts here, I know they are not very popular in Parliament, but they are the best. The minister, we don't want Parliament to interfere with the day-to-day operations of the department, but we do want Parliament to guide the process. And the only way to do that is by the minister to appoint these boards in consultation with Parliament, you see. And all other things can happen there, but at the end, when the minister has appointed that board, it must come to Parliament so that we look into how these people were shortlisted, who were there, and then we're able to say, no, I think we are fine, you see, because By the way, here in Parliament, we represent also, we are public representatives. We represent constituencies. We have more information about what the minister alone may not have, because we come from various areas where we know that, in fact, this thing, especially this deals with waste, which is about ordinary communities and their environment. And so to say that Parliament has no say in that is very dangerous, very, very dangerous. I just saw the state law advisor wanting to say something.
Okay, Chair, I just wanted to warn the committee on one thing. The presenter keeps on referring to the existing wording of some legislation. Just want to warn the committee that there is a danger of using precedents when people draft legislation, not knowing the relevance thereof to this particular one. So we are dealing with this legislation now, and the members must deal with it as they deem fit and not be told or to say this is how it was done previously. If I may be allowed to take the members back to a section about the powers, section 6, which deals with powers of the agents. The presenter has proposed that those powers must be referred to as ancillary powers. I don't know where are the main powers, and because this legislation, this institute is going to operate in terms of this legislation. And when they do so, maybe there will be one or two other legislations, for example, the Public Finance Management Act, that they will have to take into account. But this will be their leading legislation. Whenever they do something, they must come to this legislation first. So if the powers that are given to them by this legislation are regarded as ancillary, I'm a bit concerned.
Members, this is a very important point of note. Indeed, this question of that other legislation has been really crafted in that way that we must follow it, I think is also in itself very non-innovative. We are innovating here. We want to have a situation where management of waste disposal is better than before. We don't want to create a body which one day is uncontrollable. We have already experiences that are very bitter about such things in other areas of legislative process. So we want to be exactly. Thank you for the presence of the state law advisor. Myself, when it was said ancillary, I remembered ancillary in terms of auxiliary. In nuclear engineering, we talk about auxiliary things. So I said, I wonder what will be there for the main thing when this thing is ancillary, meaning it is auxiliary. It's a kind of assisting, not really main. You see. But then I said, probably I'm out of order because this is a technical, legal, you know, document, maybe. But now at least I've been absolved. So, therefore, I think we have to be careful about these things. Let's hear what the chief director said.
Okay, I think maybe we take the point from the state law advisor, but maybe we can then change powers to function. But these are ancillary, you can call them powers or functions, but they are ancillary. Because the main function of an agent is not to hire a building. And these things here talk about hiring of building, purchasing property. The main functions are covered under Section 5.
There is Section 5, Chair. The functions of the Institute, in other words, the main powers are being derived from these functions that the Act place on the Institute.
Sure. So, Chair, I think it's about hiring, utilizing buildings. That's what Section 6 talks to. And that's not the main reason why this agency has been formed. The main reason what they do is under Section 5, which is why then they are ancillary.
I make perfect sense, but maybe just to be consistent, Section 5 talks about functions of the Institute, and then under 6 it talks about auxiliary powers. Maybe just for consistency, we should say ancillary functions of the Institute, so we use the same word. But otherwise, I think it makes sense.
Section 5 and 6, that's
what
I said.
Yeah.
Of the Institute, and these are the main powers basically, or functions of the entity.
No,
yes, because I'm sitting in a very unfortunate disadvantaged position. Yeah, yes. But there's no way that I can sit here and look at you because we're facing that.
No, okay. I think I was just following you very nicely when you were talking about not understanding ancillary. I think we need to start from that angle so that we can all participate, unless maybe you already understand it.
No.
So that we can have input, if they can just explain that one. Then we'll look into the issue whether it's powers or functions, but we need to start from that angle.
Chair, if I may, I must repeat that when drafting our nuclear legislation, we are informed by our other acts, like the Nuclear Energy Act and the NNR Act. So we cannot ignore them. And this is also the format that has been used now. So they've got the main functions of that entity, and under that they have ancillary powers, just to make sure that they are giving additional powers to tell them they can buy buildings, they can erect buildings, they can do some things in order to manage their entity. And that's why it's called ancillary. It's like additional powers that we make sure that we want to give you. Otherwise some people could say, hey, no, you cannot put up a building here, or you cannot do that or that. We need to give them these powers in order to be able to purchase something, to erect something, to construct something, to hire, etc.
I would have an argument there. I'm worried about this. The board and the CEO of any entity is supposed automatically to have such powers in deciding the life of an entity or an institute. Now, I do not know why they are reduced to small powers and bigger powers. You see, I'm not sure about that, because, if it was drafted like that in NNR, and then, well, you must remember that we're very new in Parliament in 1994. It may happen that those things happen. They need to be reviewed now, because I do not, you see, we don't want to have a situation where a CEO does something, they say he did not have the power to do this, or the board say no. Because, you see, this is a government entity, of course. If you are saying that these responsibilities of buildings and other things, there may be many other things that are not directly spelled out here, but when we are dealing with law, then they will be part of the tools where they may be argued in a court of law. But you see, we spelled it out very. It's not only in this act, even in this act, we said that the main important functions of this institute is only this and not that. This must be dealt with by the public the public works, or this must be done by that, or the HR has only the power to do that, and not the board or the CEO. You know, we don't want those technical. We want to know what we mean in putting these kinds of technical terms.
That's the way forward. The way forward is that there was a suggestion or a proposal that when we talk about later, we can say. No, this is
unclear.
Hold on, man. I'm thinking about something else in the military. I thought the main thing in the act is it's like in your business plan, you say this is our core business. So here there should be the power, the powers. And when you've got the core powers, you've got it all. So all other confusing terminology we can just remove.
Yeah, I think
that will be the best, because obviously your board will say to the CEO, these are your powers, you see, which are immediate. If you they give the powers, they will constitute those powers as ancillary powers. You get my point, but I'm saying as an institution it should say these are the five powers. So Section 5 covers those issues. Then Section 6, because it has additional powers, those powers can be referred back to the CEO.
I'm not sure. I wanted us just to look into Section 6 versus 5-0. What is the difference between what we are putting in into 6 versus 0 under 5? What could 0 implying to? Is it could be different from what we put in there under 6?
I think the reason we think that this is important is to spell out these things. Is that when, for example, we go and argue for the entities, as an example, in the at a treasure. It becomes difficult to actually convince, treasury that certain, for an entity to operate, it has to do certain things. You know, where does it say that you must hire a building? And without, authorization, for example, here, it would be difficult for them to justify some of the things. I think we were...
Some people are pretending I don't know, but the people are laughing as we can't really concentrate. I'm very sorry.
Members, can we concentrate here? Yeah.
Well, I'll give an example. Awarding a bazaar.
Just before you finish, did you check what the member was raising? Did you check what O was saying?
Yes.
But then any other additional?
In our view, always open to interpretation, one. Secondly, it refers really to the main object of this, to the technical side of the work of this, of the institute. It does not talk to the admin. These other powers under 6. Are really things that,
Where does it say that these powers under 6, they really mean other things? Where does it say that? Because it only talks about ancillary powers, nothing more. It doesn't specify what are those? But it doesn't talk about buildings. It does. These are examples that you made, if I'm
no,
not...
No, it does.
It does.
6D talks about... 6B talks about purchasing of buildings, property, and so on. And they are all those are sort of what we would call softer. What I was proposing is that we leave ancillary, but maybe then consider whether we can put functions or
Now, ancillary gives you the powers that are additional, that are additional. Now, once you specify also those few things, that these are all what you are going to be doing, don't you think that therefore it becomes redundant again? Because once you say that, if you say that you Section 5 must add ancillary powers to do any other relevant things to make the life of the institute work, but once you specify, what if something is not specified then? I don't know. What you are saying, you see, our argument here is that if they insist that 5 talks about the technical core functions of the institute, and then 6 talks about the ancillary functions or additional whatever, which are more of administrative nature, I am saying that they must simply say so without then starting to specify like buildings like that, because then it should be that section must simply read as ancillary powers for that may be relevant to other administrative requirements, and that's it.
Chair, I agree fully with you. Could not have put it better myself. Powers, there's nothing wrong with referring to those things in 6 as powers. Because powers is what you need, what authorizes you to be able to do your function. So they are not functions, they are the powers that will enable him to act on his functions.
Yeah. Chair, I think Section 6 is absolutely essential for us to keep, and I'm happy to call it functions. But if you look at some of the wording in J, acquire patents, licenses, concessions, the right to manufacture, these are not normal administrative things. And what the section do is to clearly tell the entity, these are the powers that you have. Request permission from the minister to undertake development. I mean, this is a specific thing where if you want to take development, transfer, exploitation of technology that you develop, you have to go to the minister. This is essential. Otherwise, if you don't have this wording, they won't know. They won't know that they'll have to go back to the minister. So there are wording here that's essential for them to guide them, to tell them you do have this power, but in this case, if you want to execute it, you have to go to the minister. And subject to the board approval. So if you want to do certain things here in sub 3, you have to go to the board to get that approval. So I think this is the purpose of this is to give specific guidance on the additional powers that we want to place on this entity in order for them to function properly. Thank you, Chair.
Now, Chair, I also do agree. If you look in each and every of that item 6, you find that it is very relevant. It is prescriptive, so that you don't allow a blanket cover that later on you would not be able to control. The only problem is the subtopic that is there that we need to agree upon is it appropriate, is it relevant? Thanks.
You mean the antenna?
Yeah.
Because as far as I'm concerned, actually, what he has just described now, the things that he has talked about, they are relevant under the powers, that she, functions of the institute itself. Because it should be able to do exactly what he's saying. And I do not know why it should be reduced to ancillary, therefore. Because it's supposed to be able to the manufacturing, the all these things are technicalities associated with the institute. And all that it says in section 5, it's about the powers that are with the institute, but in six, it reduces the power that the person, if it is supposed to, it should, that, which is what I was saying, that the institute together, coupled with its primary leadership, which is the board, the CEO, and whatsoever, CFO, whatever, they should be able to do so. Those are the powers that these officials have in running the institute. Why are they ancillary? Because we are worried about ancillary use one day to make things difficult. Whether in both directions, in both directions. There will be time when this institute may go to court, and the judge will say why. Well, according to the act was saying exactly ancilla, and if just before it there was no ancilla, so you did not have power to do what you did. See, and what do you say?
They should have been that on the terminology, because for that's what my terminology. It's what the department coined. So the state law advisor is deciding on that. So let the department correct it. If it comes with it later, it's fine. Like we can proceed to other things, but we'll come back to it as soon as we've resolved it. We agree that all the issues around six are important, they are fundamental, but let's resolve that heading.
I do not know. Members, do you want them to have 5 minutes to just to resolve that, or what we continue and they'll resolve it later?
We have a proposal. If we delete ancillary, would that solve the issue? If we just think so.
Because it's ancillary which is disturbing. That's power. They must have power to do all of this.
So why do we have 5 and 6? No, I'm just saying functions and power is fine. Maybe that way.
So 6
to
5 will be
functional. 6 will be powers. That you have power to do this or that. Yeah, so it's good. And Zillary then is gone.
I've already deleted here, thank you.
Two hands, right. Mr. Chairman, I hate to prolong this, but if we're going to make 5 and 6 virtually the same as powers and further powers, or
five will be function and 6 will be power.
Okay, but I think that's the problem. Function and powers are not 100% the same. And 6 was initially additional or auxiliary. Now we make it powers that's stronger than function. If we're going to keep that distinction between 5 and 6, we should rather do it other way around. Then 5, which is the core function, should then become powers. And 6, which is the ancillary or the secondary function, should then be function, if we want to make it a function. Then it should be just first powers, and then 6 should be function, if we keep it separate.
There's a federal advisor here wanting to do a game guidance.
Chair, there is no problem with those subheadings, as they are powers of the institute and functions of the institute. Because if you read the provisions themselves, what is in 5 is what the institute must do. What is in 6 is what the institute may do in order to achieve what it must do in 5. Both of them are proper. It's just that it was the word ancillary that was problematic. And the line between functions and powers, there is a thin line. Functions are not the same as powers. Powers, as I said, is what you need to have in order to execute your functions. So they are right the way they are done there. But what I have realized is that members, they only have the document that is on the screen. They don't have the bill that is before them officially. Because what is there in the screen is what's supposed to be an amendment to this. Because what is going to happen here now? We need to produce an A list as soon as we agree on that thing. That A list must come to the members and they must read it together with this document. What we are doing now is it's more of a discussion of what will be agreed on. And then when we've got a proper A list which we can read to this, that's when things will be more clear.
What they are doing now, they are presenting things that we discussed last time, and they are coming to say how they have done them. And once we are still questioning some of them that are here. And now, once we have finished this document, we are going to go then and do exactly what we are saying, and then we'll then go through. So that is why when we first started here, I announced that we must be focused because time is very limited. We still need to have the other process over and above that we'll have finished this. When we say we've finalized, it will be meaning that we have agreed about the changes that are here, but which we have to check now against the original amendment. That's why I said that. And we have only today and tomorrow and Friday to do all that. So, not tomorrow, because tomorrow we have got another act, which we must also go through in the same way like this. So we only have Friday, in other words, to do all those 2 bills when they come now with the separate everything, and then we go from the original bill amendment to what we have agreed upon. We still want to have, from our experience, we want that once we have done that by Friday, we need to have the copies that are clean for Monday. Before we go to the debate on Tuesday, because we have an experience where we went to the debate having been promised that the things have been done, and we found that they were not done, and then I had to stand there and start to dictate changes. And when I dictated changes, other people went to say that those were my own changes, they didn't know about them, the people I was trying to face. So I'm not going to have that situation now. So we need to be very clear that by Friday, we have everything clean and we are agreed about a clean bill, which has got all what we have said.
The A
list. The A list. Yeah.
Okay, just on a personal level, I'm the person in the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor who's dealing with this bill, and I would like to see it running smoothly up to the finish. But I've got a problem in the sense that from tomorrow, I'm on leave. By tomorrow, I'll be on my way to the Eastern Cape. So perhaps if after this discussion, I can sit with the department, we prepare everything. If the members can agree, even if it means finishing at 10 o'clock tonight, just to ensure that everything is done properly, as I'm the person who's well-versed with the bill, I would prefer if I were to see it up to the end. But by tomorrow, I'm not available.
Mm-hmm.
No, there are people who others will be sick by 5 or 3, others will be some are in and out, and we must be for approval. By the way, we must form a quorum. So then it is very important that what the state law advisor is saying, we are able to be unanimous and don't find a problem when it comes to numbers in the later hour.
Agreed, Chief.
Okay, agreed.
We agree.
Okay.
Agreed, Chief.
Okay.
Friday not.
Okay.
What 7 is, Baba?
Okay. No, no, no. He says that you wanted to say it's agreed if Friday is excluded.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Comrade Chair. Oh, sorry, not comrade.
No, you can.
For the way of procedure, Chairperson, in section 5C, I would like to propose, comrade Chairperson, before safety, we must add environment, health, and safety. Just before safety, we must have environment, section 5C. Yes, sir. We must add environment, health, and safety.
Where it says the institute must develop radioactive waste acceptance disposal criteria in compliance with applicable health or whatsoever, but health, environment, health, and safety. Before safety, we must have the two. Thank you, Chair.
Because, Chairperson, under the Principal Act, if we forget to add the health of workers, and there will be wrong, Chairperson, must put health, environment.
We'd like to propose that we make it health, safety, and environment, just to be consistent with our
health, safety, and environment.
Environmental.
First time you make a brilliant input, especially what you've been away. I want to thank you.
Okay, let's continue then. Right. What's the time now? You can continue. Sir.
Thank you, Chair. I'm proceeding to some of the changes that we propose. Under Section 10, Section 10 is removal from office and vacation of the office of Board of Directors. And it says, subject to provisions of the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act, the Minister may remove a director of the Board from office. And it gives a reason for the issues how the director can be removed. And we propose to delete after consultation with the Board.
I give you powers, members, to shout chair from that side if a member wants to contribute, because I'm concentrating. I'm in a very disadvantaged position to know to see the hands. So if at all you want to comment, just call me and let us allow you your contribution. Okay. Sir.
I wanted to say maybe we're going to be assisted.
Can I proceed, Chair?
Yeah.
Can I ask a question for the motivation of that deletion?
Yeah.
After consultation with the Board, why should it be deleted? Because in principle, it's not a bad thing.
we don't see the reason why the minister should consult the board after they've infringed the legal requirements, has repeatedly failed to perform his or her functions efficiently, has failed to attend meetings. So once that has happened, why should the minister go back to the board and say, you know, why and consult? Can I then dismiss this director? So we don't want to weaken the powers of the minister in this case.
There's a lot of ground spelled out under what conditions the minister made it.
Okay,
fine.
Yeah. We have discussed section 16, so I will proceed now to section 17. Functions of the chief executive officer. These are the standard changes that we've already discussed. We have made a correction here from the document that is in front of the committee. It did read, the board is the accounting officer of the board. So now we've corrected it to the chief executive officer is the accounting officer of the board. Under section 21, funds of the institute, we've added a new A, money received from waste generators on a cost recovery basis for services rendered in terms of this act. This is probably the most important, one of the most important sources for the normal routine operation of the institute. For all the generators that dispose there, they must pay their way in terms of the polluter must pay. And then I think we've already agreed to see.
It looks like we have you have an open-ended agenda for the establishment of this institution. Yeah, don't you think? I mean, how are you going to operate this institute? Because you say I remember that's a long-term thing is the establishment of this. Of the fund, which actually is going to be compelling generators to be able to be penalized whenever they are irresponsible. Now, it looks like therefore it's a very open open-ended agenda because if the time frame, the timeline of the establishment of this institute is not spelled out, then how are you going to, in future, be able, therefore, to administer and control this generator? So it will be an institute that simply still continues to be there without teeth. Yeah.
Yeah, I think what we should understand, we have an existing operational facility that the agency will take over. And that is a routine operational facility, and waste is now being disposed there, and they're being paid for it. That is the ongoing operational aspect of it. However, in the longer term, there is the issue of high-level waste that has not yet been operational. And therefore, we must distinguish in terms of funding. Now, the service that they rendered, continuous service, they're being paid for on a cost recovery basis. That's the one aspect. The other aspect, they also can later on receive money for the long-term disposal management. That's the two aspects that I think we should clearly understand. It is an operational facility now that receives money for its services, and in addition, for the long-term management that's coming later on, there's going to be the fund, and they can also receive money from that fund.
But it is this long-term that I'm saying is open-ended. It is exactly this long-term. Because, you see, if we spell out and say that on a long term basis, we are saying that, say, within a year after the establishment of this, establishment of this act and this institute, we would then, you know, then we are putting a time frame on the, you see, therefore that immediately the work must start, processes should start that are establishing this institute, because if it is open-ended, it can, you know, it can even take some 2 decades before it is established, because every after 5 years, there is a new political administration and so forth. And by the way, you have made us to be convinced here that this institute is going for the first time to make these generators of nuclear pay for what they for what they contaminate. Now, if you are saying that you do not know when, you will still continue the old way. What is the point? That is my question.
Now, Chairperson, maybe let me hold, let me hear the response, then I will come in if necessary.
I'm not sure I understand the Chairperson to be saying that we should tighten 5C, 21C,
yeah,
to give a time frame to the fund.
Yeah.
Now, I think it's up to the committee to advise us on, because it's a commitment, it's committing Parliament to establish a fund. So if it says within 2 years, that's a commitment that, you know, we can't make on, you know, we wouldn't want to impose on, you know, on the legislature. So if the committee is happy with 2 years, I think we could put 2 years or a year. We could process it as quickly as possible, but we don't want, because it says, as it reads now, that the fund must be established by an act of parliament. In a way, it's a commitment as well as committing the legislature.
You see, there are many, that's why I'm asking, because there are many of such legislations on policy that, you, as you said, some of them were, there some policies, some of these policies were established as early as 2000, but until now, you are now coming up with these things only in 2008, years later, you see. So what I'm trying to say is that one of the most important pillars that convince us, this House, that therefore there is a need for this bill to be passed, it is because for the first time this bill is going to be doing new things which have never been done. It's going to have more even or heavy-handed way of managing this waste, radioactive waste, not managing the disposal. And then you said part of what you have in this is that the polluters must pay, and that made us very happy. That polluters, then if they have to pay, then they'll know that then they have got to be very careful about polluting. Now, if then you are saying that again, that is open ended, you are still going to continue with the old way of, because we already had to, you were already administering medium level waste, and then they were already paying. So it means this bill is not coming with something new. It will only have something new after some many years that are not even spelled out. And therefore, what we think is the exciting provisions of this act, and I won't be realized as early as we thought they would. That's what I'm trying to say. And I'm saying that we thought that this bill, part of what it's going to do, once, because we have explained it quite fairly, that it's a money bill, and therefore this fund is the fund that must, it's a fund that depends on the generators. They have to contribute by being managed properly than before. Then you are saying now that, well, you are going to use the existing processes, because that's a very long-term thing about, high-level waste. That's what I'm saying, that I think it's a little bit disappointing if it's that, because then it means that this bill is only creating an institute which is going to be, again, toothless, because we are still going to continue the old way. That is my argument.
No, Chairperson, now I can come in. I think Chairperson is alluding to the importance of the speedily implementation of this program, if I may put it this way, that will come out of this bill. But he's taking it from the angle of Section C. Mine would be, if you can put time frame on Section C, will it mean that now immediately this whole program can be put into place? I think the department needs to indicate on that. The importance of this, to make it a point that everything is implemented, the program itself. Is it possible? Because for us to get this bill to be approved, it's not sufficient. We want to see it being implemented as soon as possible. But it depends on how you accommodate us in the same bill as such.
Those ones that have got their phones on, please. We know there is one member always, leave his phone on. May he, because it's a he, at least I'm confident about the gender. Yes. Right. can you read?
Chair, thank you. I think it's important to note again that the Radioactive Waste Management Fund requires us to establish this entity and the fund by statute within 5 years. And that was from 2005. So we got 2 years left. We've made progress with the one. We started drafting the other one. So in terms of the government policy, the department is obliged to, within 2 years, come up with the Radioactive Waste Management Fund bill. I just want to add also that this act will actually is new. For the first time, the entity that will dispose of waste will be independent. Secondly, for the first time, there's a certificate of waste disposal. There's an instrument that didn't exist before in order to manage the whole system properly. And then also, the funding in this thing is quite new, that it's clear now in law that they will pay for the services. And if the department complies with the policy directive, must within 2 years come up with this bill, and therefore within 2 years, the generators of waste will have to start contributing to the new fund bill. That's all I can say to you.
But there was this independence thing which keeps on coming. It's a loophole. Yesterday we talked about it's wholly owned by the state. Now you bring back the independence, and the reason why we change it from an agency to an institute. So we don't want it that way. So it needs to be corrected.
Okay, can I just correct that? I think we it's independent of the generator. So that is I think because we are used to using this term.
Independent.
Of, exactly.
Chair, if I may proceed then to section 22, sub 2, where we change the word disestablished to our original abolished. So I don't know if the state law advisor would be happy with this, but we propose it to read, the institute may only be abolished by an act of parliament. If the possibility arises, it's unlikely, but it's a standard, like we're standard wording in legislation too. Okay. Okay. Then I'll go to section.
Sorry, Chair. It goes back to what I want earlier on about the use of certain words, because we saw them in other legislation. The legislative drafting is a process, and the way we draft, it develops. We have ceased to use words like abolished, because we are establishing an institute here. and we can only disestablish it in terms of an act of parliament as it says. Therefore, we must go back to disestablish, because that one, the word abolished, we have ceased to use it in the legislative drafting process.
In section 23, sub 1, we have added the words, and any person wishing to dispose of radioactive waste at an authorized waste disposal facility managed by the Institute. This is just to improve the wording and the clarity, to make sure that people understand this is only at an authorized waste disposal facility, because this is a defined word. It's a authorized waste disposal facility, and I think it just improves this.
But I'm worried about that, okay? Because we've already discussed about ownerless waste. Now, ownerless waste, therefore, it means any Tom, Dick, and Harry can, or any Tom, Dick, and Harry can throw waste anywhere, and because you are tasked to make sure that the environment is clean of this radioactive waste, you have to. If you leave it like this, then it means that because it is not your prescribed site, then you are not responsible, because you have only, it's only a facility managed by the Institute. So if it is not in a site that is managed by the Institute, then it's not of your responsibility. It's dangerous.
Because I explained before that the state will dispose of the owner in the past. We discussed it before, but the way...
Comrade. Order, please, comrade.
Is it possible to listen, comrade?
Yeah.
Yeah, because now I'm losing my point now. The point that I was raising is that it will be the responsibility of the state to dispose of the ownerless radioactive waste. And at the same time, where that waste, radioactive waste, resides or is found, it is the responsibility of the state or the department to make sure that the way it disposes it is at that institute, which is authorized. You get my point? Because this point raised here is linked in another section, which I can't.
Probably they'll explain it, but you see, the ownerless, remember that we have agreed that this institute is a state institute itself. And it has talked about that at times they will also have to deal with ownerless waste, isn't it? Now, what you are saying, therefore, here, that is a little bit contradictory, in that this one now says that if it will only be active waste disposal facility managed by the institute. So, can you explain that?
Sir, I think maybe there's some misunderstanding. The even ownerless waste, if they want to dispose of, can only be done at an authorized waste disposal facility. It cannot be done elsewhere. It must be authorized to comply with our other legislation, the NNR Act.
By whom? Because if it's ownerless, therefore it owns it. Who is going to
authorize? No, the waste is ownerless,
yeah.
But the facility that it must be disposed at must be authorized by the NNR, and that is defined in the list of definitions. Authorized waste disposal facility means a facility that's authorized in terms of the NNR Act. Now, what I think you should be looking at, if we don't insert that wording, it reads, any person wishing to dispose of radioactive waste must apply to the chief executive officer. So anybody can then apply, I want to dispose of waste in my backyard. Now it says, dispose of radioactive waste at an authorized waste disposal facility. So that clarifies that, Jack.
I'm still not agree. My reasoning has not been picked up here.
No, Chairperson, if you look at the title of that section, it is talking about disposal application. So we can't bring something else if we talk about whoever wants to apply for disposal. That is giving the procedure there. But in terms of the ownerless, I, as a public member, I can report to them or to any authority to say, I've identified ownerless radioactive waste somewhere. But they are now fully responsible to take care of that. It's like mines that have got no owner. The state is for the sake of health of the community. That was my understanding, that they are not going to come and say, no, it doesn't belong to us, it belongs to that hospital. They'll have to deal with it, then they do the investigation, penalize whoever was involved and so on.
Chair, those words I don't think they are necessary per se, because they might have some unintended consequences. Because that wording that has been inserted there, it creates a gap for people to still be able to dispose elsewhere.
Mm.
And here the bill is trying to ensure that we eliminate ownerless waste, and we know where waste should be disposed of from now going forward. So it does create a gap, because one will say, I can still dispose elsewhere, because in order to dispose there, I must get a certificate.
Mm.
You see?
That is
what
I'm trying to say, Mr. Warren. If the members look at this, in the context of how it starts to define. But therefore, the gap still exists, as you say.
In terms of, it still exists in terms of exactly what you say. That's what if people have not followed those procedures, what happens? And what if the waste now is ownerless, not only ownerless, nobody even has identified it, or even one has identified that there is some waste there, and they say that, well, according to us, we have closed the closet, we only manage the waste that has been applied like this and has been stored. And this is what we give as an authorization. So that one, that generator of that waste must look at, he must dispose of that waste himself. You see, we can, but on our time, we are still busy with other things of our applicants. We have our applicants here whom we are processing. We will look at that later on, because it's not in fact in our affordable facility for sale, and there was no application we received about it. You know, many things like that can happen.
Okay. Chair, I think...
I said to you, you never appointed me.
Oh.
I read you have done all the some of the things you said.
Chairperson, I'm also... This is really making a loophole by saying any person wishing, which means if you don't wish to do it, you can do it. You don't want to go to the disposal, to the area that you are supposed to dispose, and you leave your stuff there. You can do it during the night. Nobody sees you. No one will identify you. Those are some of that's this wishing. Is wrong. I think it should say must. Not wishing. Because if I don't wish, I'll go anywhere.
Right.
We are comforted by the noting that where we err, the committee is there to guide us. So we will remove this and go back to remove that the loophole that is united. But I thought that the wishing is legal is legal drafting, the wishing part. I don't know if we can find another, but we will take out the...
No, I think that was the wishing has to do about that anybody with intention, probably with intention to dispose of radioactive waste must apply. Yes.
Intended to dispose
which is a legal bit
of radioactive waste.
Legal bit making, right?
Yeah, I think we can think of a wording because we want to ensure that everyone who produces this waste dispose it where we want it to be disposed. So what we can say any person who has to dispose of radioactive waste must. Any person who has to dispose of, instead of saying wishing, we say any person who has to, who has to dispose of radioactive waste must apply.
Thank you, Mama Tivela. Sorry for not seeing you. I'm facing that side. But if I said you have a right to shout. Hey, you shouted, you caught me.
Thank you, Chair. In section 25, we just added the word waste because that's the waste defined, authorized waste disposal facility. Just an editorial correction. Then we've deleted some wording. In A, the generations of radioactive waste must develop and implement site-specific waste management plans based on national policy. And we've deleted in accordance with the national regulatory framework. We didn't propose those words originally in our text. We're deleting in accordance with the national regulatory framework. That's a given. They have to look at all. They have to look at the policy and the NNR Act. So we don't think that's appropriate wording to add. Then in B, provide all relevant information on radioactive waste destined for disposal. As required by the chief executive. We corrected the wording here because in the document that was put before you, there was the wording was changed incorrectly. Then in C, demonstrate compliance with any conditions of a radioactive waste disposal certificate, not management. We've discussed that change previously with you. Then in 3, we deleted the word must. The generated radioactive waste remain responsible for all liabilities in connection with such radioactive waste under their control until such time as the radioactive waste has been received and accepted in writing by the Institute following an inspection at which time liability shall pass to the Institute. Well, I think we've just corrected the wording there. These are changes that we've already agreed to. It's the functions of the agency. The minister may delegate any power and assign any function. And again, we've deleted duty and put in their function. Under Section 29, the minister may make regulations regarding anything which, in terms of this act, may or must be prescribed. Because in some places of the act, the minister is obliged to prescribe. So we have to put in there, must be prescribed. Then we have a section, there's a section, Chair, on transitional provisions. Obviously, it's important to provide for the transitional provisions, and here we have made some changes that we want to propose. In 7, we say, despite the provisions in subsection 1A, all contracts entered into
by the South African Nuclear Energy Corporation for the receipt of radioactive waste at the Vaalpit National Radioactive Waste Disposal Facility will become null and void 30 days after the specified date, whereafter the acceptance of radioactive waste will be subject to the provisions of Section 23, 24, and 25. Now, those sections is where you have to apply for a certificate. So we want to terminate the old practices. At one stage, we want to say, okay, now you must apply so that we do it in accordance with the new legislation. Yes, we gave them 30 days after the operation. That's quite reasonable. That's right, yeah. This is used not in the same context as previously discussed. So the minister may make regulations regarding any ancillary or incidental administrative or procedural matter. So it's additional to, this is sort of like normal legal jargon. It's not related to our previous discussions on ancillary powers.
That's
correct, yeah.
So I'm looking at the bulletin
item that within 30 days of the implementation of this Act, 23, 24, and 25 will kick in. But does that mean automatically the person has got, if I'm applying, does that mean automatically I've been granted the license? Because it might be I don't meet the requirements. For argument's sake, if an applicant does not meet the requirements, what would happen? Because the Act has kicked in. Would you take responsibility? What would be the case?
That's why the section clearly say that those contracts, these existing contracts for disposing of radioactive waste, when this Act becomes operational, this Act is saying to those people that's disposing there, 30 days after the operation of this Act, you're going to have to comply with sections 23 and 24. So in other words, you won't be able to continue disposing after 30 days unless you have applied for a certificate of disposal and unless you comply with the conditions that we laid down. So this is also good because it's now reviewing previous agreements the way they did it.
Now, that's where my question comes in.
If in case that person complies, but it does not meet your requirements because you've got requirements that they should meet, what will be the case? That gap? Will he have to keep his disposal with him on his own site until you approve? What will be happening in between the time?
Yeah, in terms of the Act, he'll have to comply. So in terms of the Act, he has to apply for a certificate. The certificate say what conditions he must comply with. Then the inspectors are sent out and they see, are these conditions there? If the conditions are not complied with, they're going to say, sorry, we won't dispose your waste. So he will have to pick it up.
Asking, remember, he's asking, what would happen to a person who has not been granted this license because or the certificate because he does not comply? He has failed to comply. He or she has failed to comply.
He'll have to comply. In other words, he's gonna have to repackage his. Let's say the condition is, you know, this is the way you must package the waste, and he didn't comply with those conditions. Then he'll have to rechange and repack the waste.
Every still does it. What happens?
The time is limited for that person to do so. If it goes beyond the time, but now he's got waste that is generated and he wants to transfer, what must he do? Because he's got maybe two areas that he's not complying with. He still has not granted.
Now, all
he's going to report to another agency to say, hey, you have to take star, now you're in room.
I think the 30 days means that we are giving him grace. Once the Act comes in operational, if he wants to continue disposing there, he's got 30 days to comply. And if he misses 30 days, then clearly the Institute won't receive his waste and he'll have to work on fixing up the things in order to later on comply.
If he does not, where you are missing the point. If he does not comply, what happens? What?
Well, if he happens not to comply, because maybe he has a serious, according to the regulations, rules and regulations that you have for the waste disposal, he happens not to be able to meet with any of them or with a few of them because he simply cannot. What happens? Yes, that is what we're asking. What happens to enforce that he complies?
I think there are a number of things that can happen here. One, the person, if for example it's Eskom, they'll run out of space to store the waste. If they run out of space to store the waste, which they are not willing to fix, then they'll have to cease operations. And also, if an operator cannot comply with waste acceptance criteria, I don't see how the NNR would allow such an operator to continue operating, to generate more waste. If you can't comply with the waste acceptance criteria, the safety regulator, in my view, would have to stop your operation.
I think, therefore, the member wants that so it should be, we should therefore that if the member continues to, if the generator of this waste continues not to comply, then this is what is going to happen. He will be reported to the NNR or he will be taken to court or he will be hanged. You know, something, there must be something that will happen to the person. Yeah. Because if it's not there, there is nothing there. That is, yeah. That is why the SIPC Act here, because it didn't have that. If anything happens in the board, what can if the president doesn't have, there is nothing that says the president can then intervene and the president can only put the board on but can't do anything after the board within itself can decide. It was saying. Now, what happens? Because that is what the member is asking. What will happen if a person does? If Eskom, for instance, and then what will be the point? Because the biggest generator of that would be Eskom, at least for now, commercially speaking. So if Eskom does not comply, what happens? I don't be afraid that there is a member of Eskom here and say that, hey, we didn't want to commit our sin, that we said this before the committee. But the reality is that we're constructing an act there which must have consequences if it is not adhered with. We can't then leave it open-ended. That it will be at the discretion of the generator to see one day that he has complied. Because then generators are going to say that, no, we're still keeping it in our sight, whether it is harmful, hazardous, whatever, they keep it until we comply. And for now, because you don't give us a license to go to put it there where you have proper management, then we will keep it in our sight. And so we can't have we can't pass an act which is open-ended like that. Yeah.
Chair, perhaps that can be done in regulations. That needs to be done in regulations. But when we get to that section, we will need to look at it carefully because it's not that clear to me, 29.1A and B. When we get there, we are not there yet, but this can be done by way of regulations. Everybody. Well, we need to look at that because it doesn't read, doesn't make sense when you read it. 29.1A and B. Perhaps we can just have 29.1 there. Can I read it? It says the minister may make regulations regarding A, anything which in terms of this act may be. And it leaves it there, it's not clear. No, it's fine then. That one, it authorizes the minister to make regulation as to what happens if you don't comply, what fines can be imposed and stuff like that.
Well, I was going to, I'm not sure if it's the there are provisions in this act or in this bill under section 25 which talk to the which not penalties as such but talk to what the generators are obliged to do. And particularly 25.2, which says, you know, the generators of radioactive waste must. And under C, it says demonstrate compliance with any condition of radioactive waste disposal certificate. Wouldn't that then cover?
If they don't do that, what happens? But at least we'll cover, therefore, that the minister has a section in the same act which gives her or him the power to prescribe what should happen. You see?
This is what they do.
Yeah. Because here you are saying these are the expectations of what they should do in order to comply. Now we're not talking about that. Granted, we're talking about what if they don't do, and what happens? Because for up until now we didn't know what would happen because we know that powerful. Remember, we are not going to remain with the Eskom as we see it. We are going to have independent power producers coming from all over the world now. We have said that we are opening up. And there will come others, even with nuclear, to come and develop new nuclear power stations. And if we leave things open-ended like that, we will have problems. But at least, because now at least a section has been identified, then a person who like if it's an international operator, who knows that after 10 years he will be leaving the country. He will simply put the waste there in his side and leave after his contract. And what are we going to do?
Chair.
Yeah.
Now, I'm worried with the transitional period when we're starting to operate, this entity starts to operate. I'm not sure institute is. When it starts to operate and taking over the role from other institutes. That is my biggest worry, that we can be able to say within 30 days from the time that when this kicks in. The failure may be from the institute itself. The minister may not be able to say something about the institute. But that is my worry, that the transitional time, we just say 30 days, that's it. Are we happy that this transitional time will be sufficient?
Let's listen. Thank you, Chair. I think we're coming to that issue in the next one. I just want to go back to what if they don't comply.
Yeah.
What we must understand is that the acceptance criteria are safety criteria of the regulator. So if they don't comply with the criteria, the operator of this institute may not accept their waste for disposal because it will be contradictory to the safety requirements. If the institute don't accept their waste, it will continue to pile up at the generator site. That is the practical aspect. It will pile up there, and obviously they are an obligation to manage their facilities properly. As indicated, the regulator will have a problem with them if they don't comply. So I think they have to comply in the end if they want to dispose of their waste. There's no question about that. And I think if it's so bad that they don't comply, then clearly there's a big problem in the way they manage or that they take part in the state's management of the industry. Thank you, Chair. If I can move on then, with this very section on transitional, we've added a section, and it reads like this. Despite the provisions in subsection 1A, the South African Nuclear Energy Corporation will continue to maintain the nuclear installation license at Fallpits, National Radioactive Waste Disposal Facility, by providing, where necessary, services to the Institute using the existing government budget allocations until such time as the Institute is in a position to take over the functions to the satisfaction of the National Nuclear Regulator.
Now, I think this is a very important thing. We recognize that when this act comes into place, they don't may not have all the staff, the skills that you have raised the concern about. We know the skills are there at the existing operator. So we're going to force them basically to provide a service to the agency until the regulator is happy that they've got competent staff that can take over fully the role. So this is quite open-ended. They have to demonstrate to the regulator they'll be able to manage the facility. And this is an important traditional arrangement.
But again, there's a problem here. The problem here now is that this, you see, whilst the member has raised a very important concern about the 30 days period of whether it is convenient or not convenient. Now, the alternative, which is this, the alternative has no time frame, and then it leaves again, it takes us back to square one, because then next then we'll continue with foul boots, although with the slightly change way of thinking, because I guess it will be this institute being monitored, depending, as you have said, that you have the required, you have the necessary skill to be able to manage over the skills that already exist at Falputz. And so that transitional arrangement, if open-ended again, it puts us back to square one. It should not also be open-ended, insofar as I'm concerned. We should have a timely date, and this kind of alternative transitional arrangement should be time. It should be time framed.
Chair, I think the as we indicated earlier, the policy.
Members, can you please listen to the inputs?
The policy that was, you know, which has led really to this bill and the fund bill, indicates that within 5 years, so which is 2 years from now, and I still think that would cover, you know, that should be sufficient. I must say, however, that the process of licensing an entity from a regulatory point of view by the NNR is particularly when they look at the competence of an organization to manage, you know, a nuclear installation may be quite a long one, because the organization has got to be staffed, has got to show that they have an organizational structure that is acceptable to the regulator, quality management systems, and all those things. And I think given the, you know, the skills challenges, you know, it will take longer than 30 days, definitely. Well, not 2 years, I think there can be, can be met, but we are hoping we wouldn't have to revisit an EIA because there is an existing facility, they are just taking over. But in our view, the 30 days, you know, may not be sufficient for the NNR perspective, which is why we've then, you know, said NEXA can assist, and then at a certain stage, you know, they will have built sufficient expertise within the organization to can then take over.
What's going to happen? I think there is one fundamental question we have not asked. What's going to happen? Because this institute is supposed to be dealing with managing even the disposal sites. So far, NEXA has got the file puts there that it has managed for the past years since its operation. And then that's a very challenging field now, actually, even to identify the site in terms of scale. What is going to happen in terms of identifying new sites? Is this institute going to take over from Falputz and continue to therefore use Falputz and displace Annexa, or probably like they will have the transitional arrangement and at the end take over? But what are the plans of this institute in really dealing with the real situation now, William, not with the practicality of really managing this? Because this is not a small thing to really dispose of the radioactive waste. What are the plans? Because the committee must be sensed what's going to happen.
Well, I think there are two issues. One is that there is an existing site. And that existing site is Falpes, is being managed by a division of NECSA. Now, in our view, that division, the Falpes division of NECSA, will form then the nucleus of the new institute. So basically you migrate all those workers from NECSA into the institute, and that will be for the, you know, assist in managing at the existing site. Now they'll have to start another process, and that is the process of looking for qualifying sites for then management of high level waste. Now that process will require, you know, specialized skills and so on. And in our view, here we can utilize existing skills within for example, the Council for Geoscience. They can assist. They are already assisting. I think there is some pockets of that skill, for example, at the CSIR as well. So I think they would have an opportunity to draw from those organizations. And that process normally takes more than a decade to actually look for a site. And in that long period, basically, you can build also the competence that you require for qualifying a site like that.
Okay. What time? When is the line secretary? Let's listen to that now. Time for fueling.
Lunch is ready, Chair. Lunch is ready when you are.
We are basically finished, Chair, and the last one was the short title and commencement, section 31, and only the word institute that's been replaced in the place of agency. And that's basically it.
Okay, thank you very much. I think now the way forward now is that the state law advisors, together with you, must go and clean up this thing and come back with a list, and then after lunch, how long do you think this process can take you? We can meet therefore at 3, is it? Yeah. If you say 2 hours, 3 o'clock, we meet here at 3. Yeah, for the A-list now. Yeah, so it may not be in the night, it may even be this day. Okay, thank you. We'll meet at 3 here. Members, I am again warning you, everybody must be here, because then we will have 2 p.m. quorum here. People must not disappear.